Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf nun zayin. Sorry, nun vav. We are finishing. We're finishing up today from the gemaras that we have yesterday. Today, one of the more popular daf in the Masechta, not to do with Masechta Shabbos or Chashabbos, but having to do with Agarata. It's not even the right way to say it, but just simply Perushan Chumash. It ties in wonderfully with this week's Parsha. It's quite remarkable how today's daf lands on the same week as this week's Parsha. And let's begin. We're on Daf Nun Hamud Beis. We're in the middle of the Amud, and we begin with Reuven. After lines get wide, it's another seven lines after that. The Gemara starts off, Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmin. It's right in the middle of the line. The line begins with the words below Avon. So if you make the statement and you say that Reuven was a chote, he was a sinner, so you're making a mistake. Meaning, do not say that. That's not accurate. That's not correct. Now, the reason why the Gemara says don't say this is because you're very tempted to say this. The reason why you'd be tempted to say this is because the Torah makes it sound like you did something which was quite inappropriate. We go to this week's Parsha. And we are turning now to Perek Lamed Hay, and we're towards the end of the Perek. This is immediately after following the death of Rachel Imenu. She's buried in Beis Lechem, and then the Torah goes on to describe Vayetze Yaakov Matseva Kvor Asavihi Matseva Kvor Asrachel Ad Hayom. There's a Matseva, there's a monument over the Kvura of Rachel Imenu. It's, it's been 5 years since I went to visit it. But Vayisa Yisrael Vayeta Olo Mehala Lemigdal Eder Vayhi Bishkon Yisrael Ba'aretz Ahi Vayelech Reuven Vayishkav Es Bila Pilegesh Aviv Vayishma Yisrael Vayu Bnei Yaakov Shnei Masar. The simple pshat in the pasuk is that Reuven goes ahead and he sleeps with Bilha, vayishkav es Bilha pilega shaviv, vayishma Yisrael, and Yisrael hears this, vayibnei Yaakov shnei masar, and the sons of Yaakov are 12. Now, if you're looking at a chumash inside, you're going to note it's a very awkward division of the pasuk, because the pasuk is divided by a space in the Torah, which normally goes at the end of a paragraph. It's right in the middle of the pasuk, and then the next line of the Torah begins with Vayhu bnei Yisrael shnei masar. Okay, so there's a break in the pasuk, a psika in the pasuk. But what of course is the basic issue is that simple pshat in the pasuk is that he slept with his father's wife. Now it's an issur in the Torah. In fact, not only is an issur in the Torah, it's one of the klolos that Har Grizim and Har Eval, that a man should not reveal Kanaf Aviv, literally the corner of your father, but it's an illusion, it's a euphemism. It means that a man's not allowed to sleep with his father's wife. So that's a simple pshat in the pasuk. That's how you would read it. And the Gemara now is telling us, don't make that mistake. Don't do that. Don't say the pasuk kipshuta. So the Gemara is asking now the obvious question. Now the Gemara quotes the end of the pasuk, and it's from the end of the pasuk where it's clear that there were 12 sons of Yaakov, meaning if Reuven's act was as simple as presented in the Torah, so then he wouldn't have been equated with the other brothers. The fact that the Torah, in the same pasuk, equates him with all the other brothers is an indication that he is still on par with the other brothers. He's as much as accepted and is in the same level of tzidkus as the other brothers. So what are you going to do with the simple pshat in the pasuk? So what you're going to have to say is that he did as he switched around the beds. He didn't actually sleep with his wife, with his father's wife, but he switched around the beds. And the reason why he did it, the motivation is the Gemara is about to explain. Tanya Rabbi Shimon Lazar Omer Mutzal Oso Tzedek Miyoso Oven. V'lo ba ma'asa zel yado. So Rabbi Shimon Lazar is quoted as saying he didn't do it. He was rescued from that particular sin. And the part of the argument to Rosh Hashanah and Lazar is, let's go forward. Let's go now to Har Grizim and Har Eval, where they're going to be standing at Har Grizim and Har Eval. And Velomar Arushochevim Ashes Aviv, that cursed is the one who sleeps with his father's wife. So, v'yavachata zeliyado, and this person is, and this person actually sinned in this exact manner. Elamani mekayim v'shkavas pelapit lagashaviv, albon imo tava. So, this is now the Gemara's explanation of why he switched around the beds. Meaning, for a moment, don't think that he actually slept with his father's wife, as it can't be. A hard reason, Mahar Eval, years later, he actually said, not he, Reuven, but the descendants of Reuven said, cursed be the person who sleep with his father's wife. So it can't be that he actually did it. What was he doing? He was switching around the beds. Why was he switching around the beds? So Amar, im achos imi haisa tzara li'imi, shivchas achos imi te tzara li'imi. Look, my mother already suffered enough over the course of her life, where her sister became her tzara, meaning her co-wife, right? Obviously, that's an issue that becomes a problem, that sisters are not allowed to be co-wives, but okay, that's its own separate unit in discussion. Not actually entered. Never, the Gemara never is bothered by that. But okay, in other words, but it's bad enough that my mother's sister is a co-wife, but then my mother's sister's maidservant, right? Following, in other words, Bilhah, who was a maidservant to Rachel. So now she's going to take precedence, and she's going to be in direct competition with my mother. He says that I can't handle. So what he did is he mixed around the beds, meaning he took his father's bed, and he took it out of the house of Bilhah and he inserted it into the house of Leah. Okay, that was the action. Obviously, in other words, it was extraordinarily inappropriate. In fact, it was so inappropriate that the way the Torah phrases it, it's as if he slept with his mother's, with his father's wife, his father's, I don't know what to call her, the concubine. The Gemara used the word pilagish. So yeah, so it can't be that. But since it was just as inappropriate, not just as, let's not equate. But since it was so inappropriate, so therefore the Torah makes it sound like he actually slept with his father's concubine. Now, there's another opinion that, same basic idea, he switched around the beds, but one of the beds that he switched around is the Mita Shoshchina, the bed of the Shechina. Now, I'm going to have a hard time explaining this, as I don't quite frankly understand this all that well, but I'll read Rashi, maybe it'll help. Maybe it'll help me. Kachaya Yaakov Ose Barba Olein Hashav Ma'amid Mita L'Shechina He would have in each one of his four wives' houses, he would have a bed that was designated for the Shekhinah. And what he would do is that when he would see the Shekhinah in one of their houses, he would then know which wife he should visit in that particular evening. And that was a sign for him, was a siman for him to know where to go. Yeah, it's like the right. It's guidance. So that's what he switched around. And now we're going to understand pshat in the pasuk at the end of Sefer Bereishis, where the Yaakov gave the brachas to all of his 12 sons, and he turns to Reuven, and Reuven is the first one to receive a bracha. Although what Reuven receives is not much of a bracha, and in fact, It was a reprimand, and part of the reprimand that Reuven received is you upset the bed. Yitzue Allah. Now, as Rashi points out over here, Yitzue Allah, what does that mean? The upset the bed? So, Rashi. Also, Shem Sha'ala al Yitzui. Dahainu Shechina. Midaloksiv Yitzue Alita. In other words, the Torah doesn't say Yitzui, what you went up on my bed, but it just simply says Yitzue Allah, which is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tam Acher. All right, okay. Rashi offers another explanation as well. And then, of course, Rashi doesn't have the words Al Tikra Yitzue, Ela Yitzuai. Anyway, but the point is that he was Mevalva of the beds, and according to this Pshar of the Acherim, it was the bed of the Shekhinah. Okay. So now where are we at? We're at the point of the Gemara where, even though the simple pshat in the psukim this week's parsha is that Reuven had relations with Bilhah, the Gemara says don't say that. That's not the pshat, but rather he got involved in his father's private affairs, in that he switched around the beds, and that is the chait of Reuven. But to say he's a chote as a simple pshan the pasuk indicates, to that the Gemara says, do not say that. Tonight the Gemara points out this is a machlokas tonight. Pachas kamayim al tosar. Again, we're going back to the reprimand that Yaakov gave to Reuven on his deathbed, and he says he's pachas. Pachas kamayim. Good English translation of the word pachas. He was, and I had it, now I lost it, impetuous. Okay, not stable.
Unstable.
Rabbi Elazar Omer. So now we're going to say the word pachas. Pachas is a funny word. And the Gemara is going to understand it, bederech no trikin. Right? One of the ways that we darshan the Torah is through Rashi Tevos, like an acronym. So, pazusa, you were rash. Chavta, you were guilty. And zalata, and you were disgraceful. Rav Yoshua Amar. Now, by the way, I don't know if I made this clear. Let me just go back one line and make this point clear. Kitanai, what does that mean, kitanai? This is a machlokas tanaim. What's a machlokas tanaim? Meaning, as we're going to see in just a moment, there are some who are of the opinion that, no, you read the pasuk kipshuto. Meaning the simple pshat of the pasuk is the way to understand it. That Reuven actually slept with his father's wife, with Bilhah. And there are going to be other tanaim who say, no, he did not. And it's going to really be, it's going to depend on how you understand the words pachas kamayim. That you were unstable, yet that you were impetuous. So if you understand the pasuk, chavta, zalta, so that means, kipshuto, yeah, he did it. He behaved in a disgraceful manner. Rav Yoshua Amar, pasata aldas. You stepped over the bound, over the law. Chatata zanita. Okay, again, the same basic idea. You were mizana. Rabbi Gamaliel Omer. Now, that is the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. So we're going to put them in one camp, meaning they're of the camp that the pasuk is to be read literally, and Reuven did exactly as the pasuk itself indicated, and we know that further evidence for that is based on how we understand the word pachas. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, pilalta, chalata, and zarcha tfilascha. Rabbi Gamliel understood it differently. Pilalta from the word tfila, yidavint, chalalta, you supplicated, and zarcha tfilascha, and your tfila radiated. Meaning, you were thinking about it, but then you dive into Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he helped you. We still need the pshat of Rabbi Elazar HaModai. Rabbi Elazar HaModai Omer, Hafoch es ateva v'dorsha. We're going to take the word pachas, we're going to invert the letters, so it's now going to be Zion Ches Pei, and we're going to darshan. Za'azata, you shook. Hirtata, you recoiled. Parcha chet mimcha, and the sin flew away from you. Comes out that according to both Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar HaModai, he did not sin. Meaning, thinking about it, even asking Kadosh Baruch Hu to help him fight his temptation, and he did not sin. I don't follow what the subtle difference is between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar HaModai. That requires its own discussion, meaning they're basically arriving at the same conclusion. So, and one's darshaning forward, the other one's darshaning backwards. Why that should be, I'm not sure, but okay, that requires its own discussion. Rav Amar, Vamilav, Rav Yirmiya, Bar Amar. We're going to give now a fifth interpretation of the word pachaz. We're going to go backwards again. Zacharta, that's the Zion. Zacharta on Shoshal Davar. It remembered how grave an error this would be. Chalita Asma Choli Gadol, you made yourself sick over thinking about doing this act. And Pirashta Malachta, and the pay is, and you separated from sinning, meaning you didn't do it. But it's interesting, though, according to these latter pshatim in the Gemara, it's actually that Reuven was contemplating, meaning the pasuk could be understood on a simple level in that it was the contemplation of Reuven that the Torah is telling us. Meaning Reuven was thinking about having relations with Bilhah, but he ceased and he desisted. In other words, on a certain level, the pshat does work in the Torah in that that was his machshava. Reuven b'nei Eli b'nei Shmuel Davidu Shlomo v'Yoash Siman. The Gemara gives us a simanim. It is strange. It's somewhat misplaced, meaning that we already discussed Reuven. And we spent now the last 20 lines of the Gemara discussing Reuven. And now we're moving on. And where are we moving on to? So the Gemara now is we're going to have unbelievably exciting discussion, interesting discussion regarding other personalities in Tanakh, where the simple pshat and the psukim put them in a very condemning light. And the Gemara is going to tell us, don't read the psukim kipshutam, as the simple pshat would indicate.
Rabbi, if there were two beds in each tent, yes, one bed for the
one bed for the
why didn't he move them?
What, huh?
There was two beds in each of the tents.
Right.
And Shekhinah moved. So what did he move?
What did he move? So he moved the bed of the Shekhinah. Meaning he wanted no indication that he should ever be with Bilhah. Because Bilhah is Rachel's maidservant. And he felt that, in other words, once Rachel's no longer around, so Bilhah shouldn't be a consideration.
But you only had one bed in your tent and every other tent
that... according to one pshat of the Gemara. That's correct. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, we are continuing in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yonatan Kol Amar Bnei Eli Chatuayno LaTorah. Bnei Eli, right? The first of one of the earlier Nevi'im of Mishkan Shiloh was Eli. We're introduced to them in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, right? Eli was of course the Kohen, and the Bnei Eli. So you read the simple pshat in the Pesukim, it doesn't put them in the best light. And I'll get to the psukim in just a moment, but the Gemara says, but don't. Don't read the psukim kipshutam. The Gemara says, if you say that they were a chote, you are mistaken. Shenem ravisham shnei b'nei Eli, chafni upinchas kohanim la'ashem. So they're kohanim la'ashem, savala karav, damarav, pinchas lochata. And so now we start with the statement of Rav. Rav says, Pinchas did not sin. Now he says it only regarding Pinchas. So as we're going to see in the Gemara, now the two sons of Eli are Pinchas and Chofni. Not to be confused with Pinchas, son of Elazar. Okay, that's a different Pinchas. Earlier, obviously. So Pinchas lochata mekish Chofni lePinchas. Now our first way we're going to do this is that we're going to assume that whatever we're going to say about Pinchas, same for Chofni. Ma Pinchas lochata af Chofni lochata. So just like Pinchas is not a sinner, so is neither is Chofni. Elamani mekayim asher yishkevunas on Hashem. So here's the problem, and it's a really simple one. It says that they had relations with the women who visited Shiloh, the married women who visited Shiloh. So that presents a very simple problem. Meaning, the simple pshat in the pesukim is they did have relations with married women. So mitoch. So now the Gemara is going to explain mitoch sheshavus kineim shelo halchu etzav baaleim maaleh aleim akasav kilu shachvum. So the Gemara says, here's what their misappropriate behavior was. Their inappropriate behavior was. You see, when a woman gives birth, she has to bring a carbon. And that carbon that she brings is going to be a machshir. It will facilitate. So that now she can go into the Beis HaMikdash, and now she can eat kachim. Meaning prior to that moment in time, she is what's called a mechuser kippurim. She lacks kapara. And that's true for a woman who gave birth. That's also true for a woman who is a zav gedola, also required to bring a karban. And the procedure usually is that you go to the Beis HaMikdash and you give money to the Kohanim. The Kohanim with that money purchase the requisite karbanos that you need, or offer the requisite karbanos that you need, and you go home. Chafni and Pinchas were unreliable. They were so unreliable, explains Rashi over here, that the women just simply didn't trust that they would take the money and use it to buy the requisite karbanos and offer the requisite karbanos. So what the women had to do, because they were so unreliable, they had to stay there. And Chafni and Pinchas, on purpose, delayed the offering of the karbanos. It was kind of like a power trip. I'm not really providing any type of psychological insight. But whatever their motivation was, it was wrong. Meaning they delayed in the bringing of the karbanos. And the women were, quote unquote, held hostage until the karbanos were actually offered, and were not able to go home until the karbanos were actually offered. And so what Chafni and Pinchas did was delay these wives from being with their husbands, and so they were mevatel the mitzvah peruruvu. So in no way, says the Gemara, did they actually sleep with these women, but by, again, getting into their own personal private lives with their own husbands, by delaying their arrival back home, so it's ki'ilu, it's like they were shochev with these women. Again, I'm going to go back to the Gemara. Mitoch Shashas, Kineim, Shalahachu, Itzabalayim, Ma'ale Aleim, Akasu, Kilu, Shachvo. Gufa Amara Pinchas, I'm sorry, Amara Pinchas Lochata. So the Gemara says, let's go back to the statement of Rav, which is Pinchas was not a chote. Shenamar, And now, what's that argument based on? Meaning, how did the Rav know that? So the Gemara says it's based on a combination of a couple pesukim. First, a pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. We're fast-forwarding now to the middle of Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yedaled. V'achi ha-ben achitov, achi i-kavod, ben Pinchas, ben Eli ha-kohen, ben Eli kohen Hashem. We learn about a personality of achi ha-ben achitov, who was the brother of i-kavod, who was the son of Pinchas, who was the son of Eli. Now, he is giving yichus. Now, normally in the Torah, we find this very often. Whenever you're given yichus, the assumption is that if you're miyuchas to somebody, if the lineage goes back to a certain individual, and the Torah records that individual, it means now that we can look back historically and say, person was a good guy. Efshar chata chep aliyadav aksiv v'hakasav miyachso. It can't imagine, this is Rav's argument, that Pinchas was a sinner, and then generations later, one of his grandchildren, who was a Kohen, is miyuchas to Pinchas. Meaning what the Navi would have done was just simply say, there's a Kohen by the name of Achia ben Achitov, and stopped over there, and not continue to give us the yichus. V'alok v'arnamar yachris Hashem l'isha sher yasenu, er v'ona me'ol ha-Yakov, o megish mincha l'Hashem tzvakos. The Pasuk in Malachi says that there's a punishment of kares. Kares over here, not the general way we understand kares, which is premature death, children will not survive, spiritual excision. Not in that sense, but cut off here means just more literally, you will be cut off. You're no longer going to be recorded in the annals of Tanakh. If you behave in such a way, erva ona. Not to be confused with Erev and Onan. That's not what the Navi is referring to. First of all, Onan is with an Aleph. This is with an Ayin. Erev Onan mi'al Yaakov u'migish mincha l'Hashem tzvakos. And the Gemara explains, how do we understand this pasuk in Malachi? Im Yisrael hu lo yelo er b'chachamim v'lo ona b'tamidim. Meaning, that if a person behaves in a lewd behavior, his children will not be sharp. That's Erev. Air literally means to be awake, to be aware, to be alert. Ona means he won't be responsive if he's a student. V'im kohenu lo yelo ben magish mincha. And if a particular kohen acts in a lewd fashion, in an inappropriate fashion, his children will not be serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. So with all that in mind now, as we were introduced to Achia ben Achitov, who was the son of Pinchas, who was the son of Eli, so if Pinchas in fact behaved in such an inappropriate manner, where he slept with the women who were bringing their carbon yoledes, so there's no way then that they would be miyuchas, and there's no way that he would have a son or a grandson who would be offering a mincha in the Beis HaMikdash, or in this case in Shilah. Allah Shema Minah, Pinchas lo chata. Pinchas was not a chote.
Had he actually, in fact, done that, would he not be liable to death penalty? He couldn't serve.
Right. That as well. Meaning, yes. So Ela Aksiv Asher Yishkavun. So now we're going to have to deal with the fact of the simple pshat in the pasuk. Now, we already went through this. Meaning, we're doing this again. Yes, but this is going to be a different track. Meaning, track number one was don't take the pasuk literally at all. Asher Yishkavun means because they delayed the wives from going home, so Ma'ale Alav HaKasav, the Pasuk made it out to be, the Navi made it out to be, that they actually had inappropriate relations, extramarital relations. But now we're going about it in a different way, meaning we're going to now take the Pesukim literally. So obviously we have a problem. Pinchas didn't engage in immoral behavior. And the Torah says he did engage in immoral behavior. So how are we going to do it this way? So, Yishkavein Ksiv. What we're going to do is, even though the Pasuk says in Lashon Rabim, we're going to say it's Lashon Yachid. Meaning, he slept with the women as they came up. And he's not a reference to Pinchas, he's going to be a reference to Chafni. Now what we're going to do is, we're going to divide the two brothers. Chafni acted grossly and appropriately, and Pinchas was fine. Ba'aksiv, Al Banai, Kilotova Shmua. Now, Eli reprimanded his sons, and he says the words, Banai, my sons, I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Beniksiv. Yeah, when you read it, you read Banai, but because we have the ability to to adjust the nekudo, so it could read b'ni. Could read b'ni. V'aksiv ma'avirim, you are sinners. I'm Rav Huna, Breda of Yeshua, ma'avirim ksiv. Yeah, but it says it without the yud, so you could read it as ma'avirim. V'aksiv b'nei Belial, b'nei Belial, and he says, my sons who are Belial, you take the yoke off. So mitoch shayel lepinchas simchos lechafnim v'lamicham al alakavstuv ki'ilu chata. Going back to yesterday's daf and yesterday's theme, Pinchas could have reprimanded Chafni, should have reprimanded Chafni, because he didn't do that. So therefore, it's Ki'ilu, they both did it. He was held accountable for his brother's sins for not giving the proper Musar and the proper Tochacha. So we really have two approaches of the Gemara, how to understand Chafni and Pinchas. Either they were both not guilty of Eishes Ish, but... Because they delayed the wives from going home, it's ki'ilu. That's approach number one. Approach number two of the Gemara is that really Pinchas was good and fine, and he didn't engage in any of this type of behavior. It was all chafni, and the pasuk can be read kipshuto, really going on chafni, not on Pinchas. Why does the Navi keep saying, the two of you, the two of you, the two of you? Because Pinchas should have given tochach. Amar Rav Yonasan. Next. We are now up to the B'nai Shmuel, the sons of Shmuel. Shmuel was a great Navi, a great Shofet. We're familiar. His sons, not so much. Now, but don't say that they were a Chote. And if you do, you're making a mistake, says the Gemara. Shenemar, Vayihi, Kasher Zaken, Zaken Shmuel, V'lohachu Banav B'durachav. The Gemara here, slight misquote of the pasuk, but the idea is very simple. The Navi says that his sons did not follow in his way. So now we're going to read the pasuk very carefully. Now it just simply means that they weren't as great as Shmuel, right? The sons of greatness, this is a thesis, but the sons of people who are great, it's hard. It's difficult to be a son of somebody who is great. And so they weren't as great as their father. But they themselves didn't sin. Okay, now you know what's coming up, meaning the simple pshan, the psukim. Elamani mekayim vayetu acharei habatsa. So the Torah does describe that they took bribes, meaning they judged like their father, they took on the same occupation as their father, and the Navi describes that they took bribes. Now, to say that you're not a sinner, and then the pasuk describing you as taking bribery, that's a problem. So the Gemara says, "Shelo asu kamay se'aviim sheyashmu atzadik mechazer b'chol mekomos Yisrael v'dano sam ba'areim shenamar v'halach midei shana b'shana v'savev beis el v'agilgal v'amitzpah v'shafar Yisrael." Meaning, Shmuel toured. Shmuel took his act on the road. Not his act, but he judged, and he didn't wait for people to come to him. He actually went around from all of Eretz Yisrael, and he judged in every particular town. So in other words, and if anyone had a case, so they didn't have to worry about the expenses of going to Shmuel, Shmuel came to them. A very selfless act of not only serving as a judge, but being available to the people. V'heim lo asu kein, ela yashvu ba'areihem. Now they were stationary, meaning the sons of Shmuel. They didn't go around and they didn't judge on the road. They stayed in one spot. And the Gemara says, and why did they do that? In order so that there would be an increase in paperwork, red tape, and so very often, and I certainly feel this way when I deal with any governmental body, but and it's just true. In other words, that the that there is a lot of paperwork and there's a lot of forms to fill out and there's fees for everything, and you're wondering what is that fee for, and so basically it's for job creation. Okay, and then I'm not trying to be cynical. It's just, you know, but it's true. Okay, and so what the Gemara is saying is that essentially B'nai Shmuel, that's the way they behaved, meaning that they were good judges. They weren't bribed. It just happens to be that they liked being in one place, and it created revenue for all the different fees that were associated with running a court. Now, kids and I, and here we go again. Meaning, even though the Gemara says, don't read the Pasuk Kipshuto, the Gemara is going to point out that there were Tanaim who read the Pasuk Kipshuto. And again, I'm just going to point this out once and we'll move on. I really don't want to get stuck on this point, although you could, meaning that we did this with Reuven and now we're doing it with Bnei Shmuel, where the Gemara says just very flatly, Kol ha'omer b'nei Shmuel chatuein olatoa by Reuven. Kol ha'omer Reuven chatuein chotein olatoa. Where the Gemara just says very flatly, don't say that they sinned. And then the Gemara points out that there are some Tanaim who do say it. So, and the Gemara acknowledges, meaning it's a machlokas Tanaim. So it's up for debate. So that it's just interesting how the Gemara starts off like with a very flat statement. And then the Gemara says, and by the way, it's a textured discussion, meaning there are some who do in fact say that he sinned. So, Kitanai, the Gemara points out, Vayetu Achari Abatza, back to the Bnei Shmuel, Rav Meir Omer, Chalkam Shalu Befiim. So, we're going to now speak out what exactly their sin was. So, number one, the Gemara suggests, Chalkam Shalu Befiim. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi explains, Maisa Rishana Roi Lahem, Shulavim Ayu. They were Levi'im, and what they did is they asked for their Maisa Rishon. Now, Maisa Rishon is a Matana. You know how Matana works? You don't ask for a Matana. It's a gift. So in other words, right? You tell your child says to you, can I please have X, Y, and Z? That's not a gift, right? That's a, you may decide afterwards to give it as a gift, but to ask for something and demand something, that's not a gift. Matnos Levi'im and Matnos Kuna, for that matter, has to be a gift, which means that it's your decision to give it to a certain individual. They ask for it straight out. That is opinion number one of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Malu Hitilo Al Balei Batim. What does that mean? Rashi explains that they were venture capitalists, meaning the Bnei Shmuel. And Pragmashia, I'm reading Rashi, Noslam Pragmashia, Lasuk Baal, Velasa Islam Aschar. I mean, basically, that's it. Rashi is describing venture capitalism. So they give a certain amount of capital to people in order to do business, with profits being divided, and they getting a percentage of the profit. And now they had to go to court. We're talking about their partners. They had to go to court. And the Bnei Shmuel says, oh, we'll take the case. And they judged the case with people who they were partners with. And obviously, you cannot be a fair and impartial judge over people that you are obviously interested in their well-being and their welfare. Okay, that's number two. Rabbi Kiva, Omer Kupa Yisera, Shamaisa, Not Lubizrawa. Rabbi Kiva says that they took extra Meiser, and they took it by force. And Rav Yossi, Omer Matnos, Not Lubizrawa. And the third and the fourth and final position is Rav Yossi, which is that they took the Matanos. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi offers a couple of explanations. Rashi's first pshat is that they took the Zro L'chaim V'keva. We know that it's not going to the Levim, that's supposed to go to the Kohen. And so therefore they took it right inappropriately. Illegally. Okay, it's called stealing. Correct, that's right. I'm trying to avoid that word, but that's correct. So in other words, so you see that according to these Tanayim, they did act more than just, you know, a little bit, it's more than just a little bit of shady dealing. It's that some of these indictments are flat out Isurim. Okay, so you see that Bnei Shmuel is subject to a Machlokas Tanayim. We're up to David HaMelech. Obviously, the chet that we're talking about is with Bathsheba. So, do not say that he was a chote. And if you say that, you're a toa. So, the Navi describes the Shechina being together with David HaMelech. Efshar. Chet bo liado. Ushchina imo. Now, the Navi describing the Shechina being together with David HaMelech, it cannot be that David HaMelech was a chote and he still was accompanied by the Shechina. Elamani mekayim madua basisas dvar Hashem la'asos ha'ra'a. So now we have to understand the reprimand, meaning he got reprimanded, David HaMelech, and the reprimand comes in the form of the Navi. And the Navi is going over to David and saying, why did you disgrace Dvar Hashem? And you were laso sarah, and you did evil. Okay, so that makes it sound like David, in fact, was a chote. Shebikesh laso v'lo asah. So the Gemara over here says, much like we described Reuven earlier, He was interested in sinning, but he overcame his yetzirah. Amarav, Rabbi Dasa mi David, mahapech v'darish b'zchusei de David. Rav makes the following statement. Now, as I pointed out, I'm a bit of a cynic, but I don't think, I didn't even explain the line of the Gemara yet, I don't think Rav meant it cynically. Meaning, very often, I made this point in the past, when you read Gemara, one of the challenges of Gemara is tone. Meaning to understand the tone of the Gemara. And we live in a very cynical world, and we're cynical, but that's not new. Meaning, for you know, this is an old problem with human nature. But I think, and you can argue, and I'm presenting an opinion, but I think Rav is saying this just simply matter-of-factly. Meaning that Rebbe was a descendant of David, and therefore when he read the psukim regarding David, he went out of his way to explain that David HaMelech was not a sinner. Okay, but I don't think he meant it cynically, like, oh, come on, none of that's true. That's not really how Rebbe understood the psukim. I think, and again, I'm just presenting my own opinion, I think he just simply said, no, he actually thought it was correct and true. And also what helped motivate him in terms of arriving at that conclusion is that he was a descendant of David HaMelech, and in other words, just from being in the family, you know certain things cannot be understood literally. But I don't think he meant it cynically or critically, like I would imagine other people in reading this Gemara would suggest. Normally what you find is when there was inappropriate behavior that was done, the Torah says vayas. Vayas means and he actually did it. But by David HaMelech it doesn't say that. V'kanksiv la'asos. Lasos means he was thinking about doing it, bikesh lasos v'lo asa, but he didn't actually go through with it. Now, what I have not done yet over the course of this whole discussion is I haven't really explained what happened. I'm assuming that, generally speaking, this particular crowd already knows what happened. But just to be clear, David HaMelech sees a woman bathing, and that woman is Bathsheba. She was married to Uriah HaChiti, and David HaMelech instructs her to come into his palace, has relations with her. And because she's a married woman, so what he then does is he sends Uriah out to battle. Uriah initially refuses to go out to battle. So David HaMelech says, okay, but just send this letter out to the general. And the general was Avner?
No.
Yoav. Oh, yeah, thank you. And he sent the letter out to the general. He sent it with Uriah. And the letter says, take Uriah and put him on the front line. Uriah goes to the front line. Uriah is killed in battle. And hence now Bathsheba is no longer married. Now, obviously, even though that's true, once Uriah dies, but while Uriah was still alive, she was a married woman. And that would be called Eshes Ish. So from the simple pshat in the psukim, it sounds like David engaged in niyuf, in adultery. He had relations with a married woman. That's a simple pshat in the psukim. And what we're going to do now is explain, do not understand the psukim kipshuto. Now, not that he didn't have relations, he did, but there are other factors that are involved that would exonerate David HaMelech from any illegal activity. Now, immoral activity, that's a different story, that's a different discussion. But we're lawyers right now, we're going to put on our legal hats. Illegal activity. So the Gemara explains, "Es Uriah Achiti hikisa becherev." So, and the Navi says to David HaMelech, "You killed Uriah." Okay, shehayel chaladona b'sanhedrin v'lo danta. Now, what's the issue over here? The issue over here, says the Gemara, is that you should have judged them in the Sanhedrin, and you didn't judge them in the Sanhedrin. You judged them yourself, and that was inappropriate, and that was wrong. Now here comes a very interesting discussion. Meaning, as will be clear in the Gemara upcoming, Uriah was a Morid B'Malchus. He rebelled against the king. Now what exactly he did, open to a couple of suggestions and interpretations, but let's just say now he was a Morid B'Malchus. Okay? Now, as a Morid B'Malchus, you remember Rebbe spoke about this not that long ago. So as a Morid B'Malchus, so that now means that you're subject to the death penalty. You cannot rebel against the king. Rebelling against the king is an act of treason, and it demands the death penalty. Now, here's an interesting one. When you are a Mord B'Malchus and you are deserving of the death penalty, is there due process? Meaning, do you go through Sanhedrin and have to sit in front of a court and be judged? Or can you be killed right there and then? So, let's take a look at Tosfos. Let's take a look at the top Tosfos on the Amud, where he quotes Kasha Lari. The Beper Kamad Megillah Armin and Gabi Navel the Mori B'Malchus Lo Baile Medine, that regarding Navel, who was a Mori B'Malchus, there was no need to go to court. Meaning, as a Mori B'Malchus, you're simply disposed of by the king. And so now the Uriya Mori B'Malchus have a Kadama B'Samach. Now the Gemara will say in just a moment that Uriya was a Mori B'Malchus. So if so, how do you understand our Gemara? Our Gemara says part of the reprimand to David HaMelech is, you know, David, you killed Uriah as a Mori B'Malchus, but you didn't go to court. You don't need to go to court as a Mori B'Malchus. V'yesh lomar. So now Tosa suggests Devar tzarich ladon v'leida im hu Mori B'Malchus aval la'ayim bedino v'lasos halanas adin u'lahamtin ad lamachar ein tzarich v'chein mashma de besanhedrin. Amar Shadon David is Navel B'Sanhedrin, Miviach Guru Ish Charbo. So Tosos now tries to create like a split decision, if you will. Meaning, as a Mori B'Malchus, so there is some court proceedings. Meaning, the court has to establish that he is a Mori B'Malchus. So in other words, just to establish the facts on the ground, that needs to be done by the court. But after that, the regular process of capital punishment by the court can be obviated. Meaning, so the next stages of, Rashi says, to be ma'ayim bedino, to investigate the matter fully, halana sadin, right, to not arrive at a conclusion so quickly, to sleep on the decision, and then wait till tomorrow, and then come to a decision tomorrow. Those things which are normal practice and procedure for capital punishment and capital cases, that doesn't need to be over here. But the establishment that he is a Mori B'Malchus, right, that needs to be done by a court. That's how Tosfos explains our Gemara here in Shabbos versus the Gemara in Megillah. The Rambam writes, flatly, a Mori B'Malchus does not need a court. Period. So, how do you understand our Gemara based on the Rambam's position? Meaning, the Rambam doesn't agree with Tosfos. Rambam says that a king can just simply establish someone to be a Mori B'Malchus on his own, kill him on his own, without any need for a court whatsoever. So, according to the Rambam, how do you understand our Gemara over here? Okay, that's what Rebbe spoke about. Right? He gave a number of suggestions in terms of how the Rambam's going to learn our Gemara over here.
What about the method of killing him?
Right. In other words, right. It was a subversive way of doing it over here. Agreed. Okay. Anyway, let's go on to the Gemara. We have a lot to do, and we don't have a lot of time. Okay. Esoria achiti kitz becher shayel chol dama sedet velo danta veishto lakachta lo liisha. Now you took his wife. But the Gemara now reads the pasuk carefully, and again, these are all Rebbe's drushes of the psukim. And Rebbe, of course, was going to exonerate David HaMelech from Eish HaSish. Likuchim yesh lecha ba. In other words, you took a man's wife. Now, obviously, that was part of the chastising. That was a reprimand to David HaMelech. But it also says likuchim, meaning that you are allowed to marry her. Now, had it been the case that David HaMelech had niyuf together with Batsheva, you know the halacha. They can never get married. Even after Uriah is long gone. Meaning, asa labav, asa labawal. The halacha is very clear. So had it been a real act of niyuf between David HaMelech and Batsheva, he would never have been allowed to marry Batsheva. The fact that the Navi says, and you married her, now again, in the context it's tochacha, but what we learn from there is that the marriage was a valid marriage. And furthermore, I mean, the Gemara doesn't make this point, but it's self-evident. Had it been real Neof, that would have made Shlomo HaMelech a mamzer.
Yeah, but he wasn't perfect at that.
Right, he died.
Huh? The first son died. No, I understand, the first son died, but he wouldn't be allowed to marry her. All right. In other words, maybe not a mamzer. Maybe let's we'll call it something else. But certainly a pogam. Right. Something. In other words, it's not. It wouldn't have been a marriage. It would have been a child out of marriage. I understand that's not a mamzer. But okay. Anyway. So lekuchim yeshu chaba. The Amar Shmuel ben Achmin and Rav Yonasan Kol Yosef Mechama Beis David Kosev Gekrisos Liishto. Now here we are at the point of the Gemara where the Gemara tells us that anyone who goes out to war. And it was the minug of Beis David that anyone who would go out to war at that time, this was not instituted by David HaMelech, as we'll learn in just a moment, it was even a generation earlier. And it could have been even earlier than that. But again, would be written for his wife. Shenemar v'esaseres charitze achalav ha'ela tavila sar elav v'esachicha tifkol l'shalom v'esarvesam tikach. Yishai sends David out to battle. You remember which battle this was? This was the battle against the Plishtim and Galias and Goliath. And Yishai says, I want you to go check out the following. Go find out how the brothers are doing. Take some food for them. And then the Navi says, and take back the Aruvatam. Now, it's a strange word. What does that mean? The Etar Aruvatam Tikach. My Aruvatam, Tani Rav Yosef, Dvar Mumrav, and Beinola Beina. From the word Ta'arovis, mixture. Meaning things which mix together husband and wife. Meaning I want you to separate your brothers from their wives. What does that mean? Separate? Meaning, I want you to go and collect the gets that they're writing on behalf of their wives. Okay? So it comes out from this Gemara over here that whenever a man goes out to battle, so he writes a get for his wife, and that now means that once Uriah is dead. Now, first of all, let me go basic. First of all, why was this a practice? And the answer is very simple, because when you're out in battle, you don't want your wife to become a almana. You don't want her to become a widow. It's better to be a grusha than to be an almana, for reasons which are the following. Number one, if you are an almana and you die childless and you have a brother, so that means that your widow now, I mean you're dead, but your widow now has a zika to your brother, and you may have a nutty brother. You never know. So people have that. So that's number one. So you save her from yibum, which you know, yibum is a mitzvah, but it's understood. It's not always the best. And number two is that you may not come back from battle. And at the same time also, no one's reporting your death.
You're MIA.
And so you're MIA. And so now your wife may turn into a guna. So for those reasons, it's advantageous for every man to, when he goes out to battle, to write a get for his wife. And now we get to some legal talk. Oh, this is exciting. And now we get to some legal talk. Now, when the get...
Were these given conditional?
That's our discussion right now. So good. That's legal talk. So now, when these getting were written, so were these conditional getting that were written, or were they just a flat get? So this is subject to a debate between Rashi and his grandson, Rabbeinu Tam. And now take a look at the third Tosos on this Amud. Where Tosos writes, first he quotes Rashi. And Rashi's of the opinion, Al Tanai, that they were conditional gittin, which basically is she'im yamos b'machamatei megureshes me'achshav, that if I die in battle, so retroactively now the get will be in effect from the time it was given. Now you understand, by the way, we're not learning gittin right now, but this is basics of gittin. You can't give a get post-mortem. Ain't get la'achar misa. Okay, rule number one when it comes to get. So you have to be alive when the get's given. So here's a funny question. So how do you give a get and say to somebody, here's my get, if I die in battle? Yeah. So right, so the way it works is retroactively, it's lemafreya. So Rashi says, that was the nature, that was the format and formula of the get. Now, Tosos helps out Rashi over here, because Uriah did come back from battle. Right? Mm-hmm. And that was after David had relations with Bathsheba. He did come back from battle, and so now what you're going to have to say is that even though he did come back from battle, but still the get's in force, and the condition of the get's in force, because the get's condition was, if I died any point in time in battle, so the get's going to work retroactively. Okay, so that's Tosos assisting Rashi in terms of the legalities.
But the thing is, as long as the guy is alive...
Oh, wait, hold it. We'll get to that. Now, here's the problem for Rashi. The Gemara in Gittin 7th Perek, where the Gemara over there says, what is her status during those days? From the time that the get was given until the actualization of the get when he dies. The Gemara in Gittin says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Harehi Keshes Ish Lechol Devareha. She's a married woman. Vim Kein Rabbi Yehuda, Isa Eshes Ish Gemura. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that means she's a married woman. Meaning that even though, I love this part of the legal talk. Even though the get will be affected later on when he dies, and then retroactively, all those days in between are, she now retroactively turns into a unmarried woman, but, in other words, going forward, that's all moving backwards. Moving forward, she is a married woman. Until actual death of her husband, she is going to be, her status is Eshes Ish Gemura, according to Rav Yehuda. Now, if that's true, so from Rashi's standpoint, we haven't helped. The Aguna will work because, in other words, when he dies, the get will be affected. But until the get is affected, she's a married woman. So that means then David had relations with a married woman. So for Rashi's standpoint, it's not going to work. Venir la Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam says, look, I'm going to disagree with my grandfather. It won't be the first time. Venir la Rabbeinu Tam shaya megarsh legamri beloshim tanai. That's not how the get was given. The get was given just as a get. It was, when he went off to battle, he divorced his wife. With the understanding that, I'll come back, we'll remarry. But in other words, right now we're divorced. Now, how is this going to work for a Kohen? Yeah. It won't. It won't. Okay, so Kohen won't go, right. Okay, I'm sorry I raised the question. It bothers me, but, okay. One problem for Rabbeinu Tam, which would obviously be helpful to Rashi, is the Gemara Bava Metzia, which is better to have bia with a safek ishes ish rather than to publicly embarrass, humiliate, and we learned that from David. Now, the idea that the Gemara Bava Metzia is referring to as a suffocatious ish, where according to Rabbi Natam, it's not a suffocatious ish. They're divorced. Husband and wife get divorced when he goes off to battle. Not conditionally, flatly. They're divorced. So according to Rabbi Natam, how do you understand the Gemara Bava Metzia? Well, the Rabbi Natam will answer in his defense, well, it means that the divorces were given privately and quietly, and so nobody knows about it. So it looks like he had relations with an Eshes Ish. By the way, to support Rabbeinu Tam, that's pretty much what happened with David HaMelech. Meaning that Uriah did divorce his wife, so they weren't married. And it looks like they had relations with one another. Okay, I'm just going to finish up with David. I know the time is late. If you need to leave, don't worry, I won't be offended. But let me just finish up with the story of David HaMelech. So, back to the Gemara. I'm sorry, I did all that. And finally, now again, this is the tochacha that the Navi is giving David HaMelech. But based on the tochacha, what we see is that, legally speaking, David was fine. Just like you're not going to be liable for the war against Ammon, they're your enemy, so too you're not going to be liable over the killing of Uriah. My taima, and now the Gemara goes on to explain, why was David HaMelech justified in killing Uriah? Marid b'machus hava, he was a marid b'machus d'amarlei, v'adoni Yoav, v'avdi adoni, sorry, let me do that again, v'adoni Yoav, v'avadai adoni al p'nei asadeh chonim, meaning David HaMelech says to Uriah, go back to the war. And Uriah, I'm sorry. Go, right, thank you. Go back to your wife. And Uriah's response says, I can't go back home to my wife because my brothers are fighting out in war. Meaning there's war going on right now. So he that was a direct order that was given to him by the king, and he defied the direct order. So the Gemara points out now that if you look into the life of David HaMelech, you will find that outside of this chait with Uriah, he was fault free. Dichsiv, and again we go back to the Pesukim in Malachim, Rak Bedavar Oryachiti. It's only regarding the matter of Oryachiti that he had remorse for, but other than that, he was fine. Now, I guess we'll stop over here. I know the hour's late and I'm behind. That's two strikes. But tomorrow, we have to finish up. We have a lot more to go regarding David HaMelech. Perhaps there's one other thing that David HaMelech erred in. Okay, we'll talk about that tomorrow. A little Lashon Hara talk tomorrow. And just a little. And we'll finish the Perek, God willing, tomorrow and start the sixth Perek of Shabbos.